Session number 8172.
Major Ford, tape 4. I understand, Major Ford, that you had some experience in Russia in 1919. And I wonder if you'd be good enough to tell us of these experiences. When did you hear, first of all, about the situation in Russia and you might be involved?
Well, when I became 19, I was sent from our depot, which was then at Blackpool, in October 1918, just before the end of the war. After the armistice, we stayed up there for another 2 or 3 months, and then the depot was moved down to Thornhill Camp at Aldershot, where we did nothing, and we were simply receiving people coming back from France. Eventually, I was detailed to go on the North Russian Relief Force. At that time, I knew nothing about it, but of course, I made some effort to find out. And apparently, the force was to go to North Russia to relieve the troops who were due for demobilization, but had to remain in Russia because of the icing, and they could not be brought back to England. They had to wait till the ice flows, and the White Sea especially had got rid of its ice. So this force was originally to be a volunteer force. And I believe most of the infantry were certainly volunteers, and they were a motley crowd. They were called a regiment. I know one of the regiments was Oxford Bucks Light Infantry, but they were consisted of men from all sorts of regiments, who normally wore their own badges, although they were supposed to be in the Oxford Bucks Light Infantry. A good number of them were ex-officers who had either found no work to do in England, and some, I believe, were ex-prisoners of war who had been captured at the beginning of the war. I know most of the officers were made sergeants. We had DSOs and MCs and all sorts of things sitting about. And this force left England in, I think, about 5 or 6 different boats, all going from different ports. The boat I was posted to 155 Field Ambulance.
Did you volunteer for that?
No, I didn't. I wasn't volunteered. I was detailed to go. I have no objection to it, because I've been at home for a long time. I was longing to get abroad again. My unit went on was a boat called the Tsar, and it left from Southampton, and we had a mayoral send-off. Oh yes, with a band and everything else. It was quite a sort of a happy occasion. We were all having a good time. I remember we were all singing away like billy all the time, and while we were waiting, and quite an amusing incident occurred there. There was a young couple saying goodbye on the on the quayside, because the poor girl was crying her eyes out, you see. And of course, all these troops lying, and we were singing, when they suddenly started singing the old thing, goodbye, goodbye, you know, wipe them clear from you, so on, it went on. And of course, the whole, all the troops on board all sang, you see, including the people on board. And it mentioned these two parts, and the girl couldn't help laughing herself. So they really parted on a happy, wasn't it? So anyway, we left to this send-off by the mayor of Southampton. And we only travelled by day. First day, yes, we went up the channel and anchored off the Nore and stayed there for the night. The next night we went up the coast, east coast of England, up to and anchored off the Tyne. And then up next one up to the Firth of Forth, anchored there. And the following day was the only day we were outside of land, when we went straight from Firth of Forth right over to Norway. I think the reason, because the whole of the North Sea was mine, you see, and we were keeping, it was right to the coast, you see, and there must have been a passage, of course, across up north. And we went straight over to Norway and then crept up the coast of Norway, watching the fields all the way. It was beautiful. I mean, and it was a beautiful journey. The only real journey that I've been on, I've never been seasick again. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. We all did. I mean, it was very comfortable because the boat wasn't full, you know, it wasn't crowded with troops. I think we only had one battalion on board of my unit. There might have been another one, I don't know. But it certainly wasn't crowded. So we all had a good time because we were, you know, enjoying ourselves. And eventually we went right round the North Cape and into Murmansk Harbour, where we anchored. I understood the reason for us going there was that all boats were going to be kept there until they were all in, and then we were to go in convoy to my particular unit was what was called Grogan's Brigade. It was just a brigade of troops, I think three battalions and the ancillary units. And then there was another brigade whose name I don't know, but Grogan was the commander. He was a Grogan VC. He was the commander. And we were in there because there was still some ice at the mouth of the White Sea. I don't even know, but it packs, you know, at the mouth of the White Sea.
What date would
this have been? This was in April 1919. You see, there was still ice about, and the entrance to the White Sea is quite narrow, and we're all packed there. So we had to wait to get an icebreaker to take our convoy of boats. Now, a peculiar thing happened while we were waiting in Murmansk. We were all issued with the medal ribbon of the British War Medal, First World War. That's the number two medal, and the second one. So I had, of course, the 1940-15 star. The next one was the British War Medal, which hadn't been issued. I don't think when I left we heard anything about it. Anyhow, it was all issued to us on board there, with the instruction that we were all to put it up and wear it. Well, we thought, we had no idea about it, you see, what it meant. Anyhow, we stayed in Murmansk, I think, for about a week, waiting for a convenient period to go. While there, we let us go ashore. We played football and that sort of thing and on the side. We didn't say anything of the town. We weren't allowed to wander about.
What did you think of what were your impressions of Murmansk when you were
arrived? Well, it was a dreary old place, actually. It's a beautiful harbour, of course, you know, but in between high rocks, but it seemed to be all sort of dry, sandy old place up there. As I say, I didn't go into the village, so I had no idea what that part of it was like. But that was the end of the railway, you see. The other brigade was going on the railway front, and they were staying at Murmansk, so they landed to go. They went up the railway. Anyway, my brigade, we were to go on to Archangel, which we eventually did. We had to go through about 40 miles of pack ice. It was wasn't too bad. We had the icebreaker. We had was the largest icebreaker in the world, and Svaya Toga was the name of it, which the troops called Sweaty Toes, as you can see. you can understand, of course, that's the nearest they could say to the Russian. I remember my boat, the Tsar, was the leading one of the four boats that went. Four or three. So we were directly behind, but it was quite an experience because it went through the ice flows, but then they all came back again. And if I remember, it was a Sunday we were doing this. We were having a Sunday service down in bow of the ship, and a cave goes bang, and another with the ice floes hitting the side of the ship. Anyhow, it was a beautiful day, light day just like this, and we had to wear our overcoat. It was cold, you see, from off the ice. Anyway, we eventually got into Archangel. And then we all marched through Archangel, you see.
That like, arriving at Archangel? What sort of place was it?
Well, it was just a port, you see, like a dock, you see, and we just landed. And then we walked along the streets, and they were various kinds of streets. But we went into the grounds of a convent. There was a hospital in the convent. It hadn't been taken over as a hospital, and we were put in tents in the grounds. But an article in the papers afterwards, when we read about our arrival there, they said we had, you know, gave the usual thing about arriving, but he said, and everyone was a bemedaled hero. Honestly, this is what they wrote. No, we were used to arrive. We had, of course, most of them had. None of us had. Actually, I already had one ribbon, the 1914-15 star, which was, of course, the only ribbon that was given for the whole of the war until the end, you see, in the First World War. It wasn't like this last one, but it would go on every year or something. So, but this is what. But see, so they all had these, but even the new recruits had got one up. So, anyway, we had we arrived there. And in this convent and in tents, and went to bed, and we were bitten alive with mosquitoes. Absolutely, it was awful. One poor man, his face had been so bitten, his eyes were closed and everything else. He had to go into hospital. You see, we should have been issued with mosquito nets. I mean, it was rather curious to think of a cold place like that, that these things arrived, but they were there, and there were millions. Not only that, because it was light all night too by that time, you see. This time of the year, just getting a night. Well, a little end of April, you see. So we were up at 2:30 playing football in the daylight. Well, we couldn't sleep with these beastly mosquitoes. Anyhow, my unit was sent up the Dvina to a place called Beresnik, to go up on the we call the river front. But I didn't go with them. I was left behind with a baggage party. And so all our baggage, all the stores and everything else to go up, were loaded onto barges, about three barges, I think it was, with a river tug pulling them. This is quite an experience, because the only fuel, you see, is wood. See, which is plenty of it up there. I mean, the whole of the banks of the river were lined with fir trees. And this tug had to stop at every 6 hours to fill up with wood. And it was piled high, and, you know, as high as this room at the back of the thing. So that was a bit of experience. You know, we pulled into a little siding sort of business, you might say. And they filled up with this wood, and off we went and did a bit more. But I'd never known such insects there were up there. There was a sort of a horsefly type of thing, which had I don't want to, a proboscis of some kind, which went right through our khaki and into there. And it gave an awful sting it was. It's quite sharp. It's like somebody sticking a red-hot needle in your leg. That was one. Then we had other types of things, like hornets, which would fly if they came and put them. They'd give you another thing, another bite. Then big horse flies. Oh, dear. It wasn't a trip on the QE, I can assure you. However, it's quite interesting when you see the various things that we went, you know, the villages we passed. They're only just like hamlets, really, by the side of the road. Occasionally you'd see a boat, a rowing boat, crossing it with the ladies rowing and the old man sitting in the back, you see. But anyway, and it took us about 3 days to get up with these tugs up this 200 miles. And when I got up there, my unit had already gone up to the front, which was, I think, about 30 or 40 miles further up the river. Beresnik at that time was the advance headquarters. So I was posted to a hospital barge which was stationed at Beresnik. This consisted of two converted barges, one a ward and the other was the necessary sitting rooms and MO rooms and things like that. And this was quite interesting. Of course, the river was swollen, as you would imagine, because all of the snow was melting the mountains from where it came. And it was fairly fast moving. But, of course, it was gradually going down. And, of course, the barges had to be pushed out. And then it had to have the... they built a sort of a wooden bridge to get onto the barge. They had to extend that. This was really interesting because they had two or three Russians, locals, I'm sure, and they did it. And they all they did, they stripped down to their underclothes so they could have to work in the war part of the time, you see. And all they had was an adze, you see, which is just a hammer one side and a sharp sort of tool the other. And with that, they trimmed the wood, made holes to be able to join together, you know, they had a drill to make the holes and put the holes in. But that's all they had. And they were marvellous that they made this little bridge out. And they had to be strong, too, because they had to carry all sorts of things on there. I remember on one occasion, they had a couple of Model T Fords came along, and they had to run those off. And it amused me because when these things were on the side of the barge, you see, when it came to there, they had to be turned round. So they just lifted off the back, a couple of men, and turned it around and then pushed it off that way. Well, the old Model Ford didn't weigh very much at the back anyway, you see. Didn't weigh much in the front. Well, now, the first day I got there, being a new boy, then of course the sergeant major says, well, you'll be on night duty tonight, you see. So I was put on night duty. Well, now, I had little training as a medical orderly, but anyhow, but what made things matters worse, but I was told, oh, that day, by the way, they had been a bit of trouble up the world, and they'd got about 20 Russian prisoners wounded in there, and I was told to go and collect their names. So I was to say, cack familiar to the mercy. So, well, what a game. They have a name, they have a patronymic, and they have a family name or something like that. They have three names anyway. So he could be, and in Russian, of course. And I had to copy this down and collect all their names. So I spent most of the night doing that. Except that I got on the end of this barge and I looked out. And I actually saw the sun go down and come up again. You see, it was all day, all night. You see, it just disappeared. And then it started rising again. And I thought, well, how marvellous. I stayed there watching it. Anyhow, I only did that for one night. And the next day, the sergeant major found out I could read and write, so he then made me a clerk, which I then did. And then I had to take my own name and I stayed and make out the list of the wounded. I stayed up there then until the Barnes headquarters would move back down to Archangel, which was after about two or three months, when they were then preparing to evacuate the place. And so I was sent down there, and I went to the headquarters then of the DDMS in Archangel.
Could I ask you about your stay in Bereznik? You know, what you were actually doing. You've mentioned your clerking duties.
Yeah, I did that, yeah.
Did you have any contact with the Russians in the area?
Well, not really. The village was nearby, and I used to walk around the village, but I never got in touch with them. Well, one thing, they couldn't speak English, and I certainly couldn't speak Russian. But what did interest me was the amount of flowers and things that were growing there, very English. All the sort of common. Even there was a hop vine growing over somebody's back wall. But it was beautiful. There were flowers came just out like that as soon as the weather had been fine for some time, even before we got there, up, up country. I mean, the only reason we couldn't get this ball was just because of the ice at the beginning of the White Sea. So they'd had already about 3 or 4 months of good weather, and all these flowers are out in their gardens and everything else. And it could have been an English back garden in good number of cases.
What were the living conditions of the people in these little villages? What sort of houses and that did they have?
Well, they had mostly wooden type of houses. I never went in any, of course, because I didn't know them. And they really didn't have much to do with us, as far as I know, because I never tried to, because it was so difficult to try and talk to somebody who can't speak the language. And I don't know whether they really liked us being there or not. I couldn't say.
Did you have any knowledge of the political situation
no,
in
I
Russia?
Didn't. Not at all, no. All I knew then was that the Bolsheviks had sort of started, and they were trying to get rid of the White Russians, at least the Tsar's people. And that we were just trying to help them. But when we started to evacuate, I realised that we were just going to leave it, as far as I could see.
Did you wonder, you know, the war being over, what you were doing in Russia?
I knew what we were doing there, because originally, but to get the people back who were due for demobilisation who couldn't get away at the right time. I know, one of the things they tried hard to see, while we were there, the peace celebrations were celebrated in England, you see. And here, I remember we had a sort of a sports day there. You see, had fun and games, because it was peace. And I know they tried a long time after that to try and get a medal for being up there. They said, we're up there still fighting when you were enjoying peace at home. The war was finished. Well, they wouldn't have anything to do with it. They said, oh, no, it's all part of the original treaty. We wanted a polar medal.
Did you feel you were doing a worthwhile job there?
Oh, yes, because we were helping. Yes, in the way, because we were getting our own people back. See, we couldn't let them there. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, the force wasn't very large, and our force was only a brigade strong. I mean if the Russians had been really on the go by that time, then they hadn't got. I mean, they were busy around the centre, around Moscow and all the other places. But if they'd have really wanted to, they could have walked straight down the lot. But that wasn't our business, was just to get our own people away. I think by that time, I can't say that we were helping the Russians at that time.
Did you meet many of the white troops yourself, the white Russian forces?
Oh, no, none at all. No, no.
Did you hear anything about them from other people?
No, I didn't, no.
How about the Bolsheviks? What was your knowledge of them? What did you know? What sort of about their leader Lenin?
Oh no! I knew nothing about the political thing at all. I mean, all I knew were these fellows that I'd had in this war, who were just Russian prisoners and wounded prisoners at that. And they seemed, you know, just quiet sort of chaps. I mean, they didn't, just suffering. That was all. They were all in bed, wounded. And they didn't, they couldn't have done much if they wanted to. In any case, they weren't interested. They did answer my question when I said Captain Miller. They did say something to me. That's about all of what I wrote down. I said, no. I tried to put it down as best I could.
Was there much fighting going on, though, in this front? You said
no. They did. There was this little skirmish when I was up there. You see, because I never went up to the actual front itself. There was this skirmish where these people were actually killed, and they were captured, and then they started to come back. And then I said we went back to Russia. Now in Archangel, life was more or less like an ordinary town there. You wandered around just as you wanted. They even had the theatre going. We used to have shows there, yes. It was quite amusing. They had one or two, you know, they had Russian artists, you know, and there was a quite a nice Russian lady singing, and she learnt one English song. Who were you with last night, I think it was? somebody had taught it to her. It was very amusing to see the way she pronounced the various things. But they did have quite good entertainments there. And of course, the troops had their own canteens and things like that. It was, of course, I mean, that I don't know. I have no idea when they actually went there, but they certainly were organised. Well, of course, they have to, because I mean, in the winter time, it must have been awful there. I mean, so you can't move about very much, because it's under about 6 feet of snow or something.
Was there any sense of panic with the people as time went on?
Not that I knew of. I knew that they did want to get away. I mean, as I told you, we had this a Russian interpreter with us, who was a professor of something from St. Petersburg University, as it was then, and who. We used to talk to him a bit about it, but all he was interested in was trying to get away from Russia. But he was a very nice old man. He was quite an elderly man, and he was a private in the Slavo British Legion. And we thought he wanted to be more than a private, so we put him up to be made a sergeant. And when the reply came back, which he, from the Russians, this Russian, which was in Russian, he had to interpret it. And we found he'd been made a last corporal, which amused him and amused us as well. But we tried very hard to try and take him back with us when we knew we were going to evacuate. But they wouldn't allow us to take any Russian out at all.